everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you along with Tom Fairbanks. Tom, we're supposed to get some rain today, but we're not talking about a big deluge, are we?
No, and as I was driving in a little while ago off to the south, I saw what looked like some showers, so probably scattered around.
Just a little bit of moisture maybe for all of our plants.
But the National Weather Service says it's probably going to continue on into the evening hours.
Okay. It's Thursday, March 7th, 2024, our 14th year now on our radio project. Coming to you from the Green Things Zocalo Village studio, we've got five radio stations under one roof, part of the Bustos Media Chain, 1030 KVOI, The Voice, that's this one, Tucson's only source for local live news talk. We have our worldwide live listening and a ton of content, 13 years of programs archived conveniently for you. At buckmastershow.com, the live line for our telephone interviews presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go to Albuquerque, New Mexico, to Reverend Dr. Robin Hoover, a social...
How are you doing,
Reverend Hoover?
I'm doing well, and you're one of my great living links back to Tucson, so good to be with you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Hoover, a social ethicist who has worked with migrating people along the southwest border for almost 35 years. He's a native of West Texas. He founded and led several nonprofits, including Humane Borders, here in southern Arizona. He writes about that effort in his book, Creating Humane Borders. Reverend Hoover is the 2006 recipient of Mexico's National Human Rights Award, bestowed by then President Felipe Calderon. Reverend Hoover, as you're well aware, City of Tucson and Pima County officials, along with really officials throughout the Southwest, looking at every imaginable option to mitigate the loss of the federal funding March 31st, that federal funding here locally in Pima County for asylum seekers had totaled, well, let's just put it this way, it had totaled millions of dollars and had been very critical over the past 5 years in helping out probably about 400,000 asylum seekers who were released here by the Border Patrol. I thought our listeners should hear your take on this, what appears to be an imminent street release coming in a matter of weeks. What is your take?
Well, just my personal perspective is that, you know, if we really wanted to provide some funds, we would find them somewhere. We have two parties that just can't get together and discuss real human needs, as far as I'm concerned. So we're allocating resources in the wrong locations often.
Is this an effort to perhaps dismantle some of the groups that had been helping asylum seekers?
Well, there is a blatant attack on some of the groups. In the last year, I was in McAllen with Norma Pimentel that runs the huge Catholic entity in McAllen. And she's been under assault from some local, but mostly just Austin-based Texas conservatives. But the biggest problem that we have in this moment is they're coming after Annunciation House and Ruben Garcia that runs the shelter there in El Paso. It's a huge system. They house sometimes over 500 a night. And the Texas Attorney General came and demanded all these records, and it's an effort to shut it down. And there was a national press conference, and it's just a whole lot of stuff going on. Any provider of goods and services to migrants along the southwest border right now should be just as nervous as can be.
You think Casas Alitas could be in the crosshairs?
Well, Arizona's had a lot of wonderful anti-migrant initiatives and bills offered from time to time. So, yeah, it could be next.
How do you envision, how is this going to look if we don't get this money into Pima County? How do you think this is all going to play out? Where do you think these asylum seekers will be left to fend for themselves by the Border Patrol? What's your take?
Well, they'll be fending for themselves, but then there'll be groups, there'll be churches, individuals trying to go out and do things, and then that's going to get them in deeper entanglements. They'll say, well, you're trying to smuggle them. No, I was just driving them over to XYZ church, and we were trying to help these people. So it's just going to get fuzzier, and it's going to get more complicated, and more lawsuits or arrests will happen. But most of all, women and kids primarily will be left just destitute on the streets.
Yeah, a lot of these people are trying to get up to Phoenix Sky Harbor Airport. You know, if they're dumped in Tucson, they're going to have to fend for themselves. And I'm just wondering, does this kind of harken back to some earlier dark times in Arizona that you can recall?
Not in the sheer numbers. This is, in my opinion, this is unique. So we're faced with a large wave. This is peak migration season in most parts of the Southwest border. Anywhere from about February 15th to the end of April is a really serious surge. Happens every year like clockwork. And so you're going to see a lot of people on the streets. In previous years, we just did not have the asylum seekers like we have now. You had people coming to reunite with families, people coming to work. Now you're coming and seeking the security of the American system that will extend care to people that are desperate, fleeing for their lives or trying to save the lives of a family member. So this one's new.
All right, let's go to our live line. Paul, caller, listener Paul, would like to add a question or comment. Go ahead, Paul. You're with Reverend Hoover.
Yes, thank you very much. Yes, I was listening to a program just recently that mentioned that the Catholic Church and its charities were gaining hundreds of billions of dollars in promoting the immigrants to come across, and it was really benefiting the Catholic Church. And also the same program mentioned that the crime rate in New York and Chicago with the illegals had really gotten out of hand. It sounds like you don't really have too much concern about those problems. What do you think?
Okay, Reverend.
I am concerned about crime, and I think the answer to this is that we need to figure out ways to process the people to adjudicate their claims and return them to their country of origin if they're not eligible. In terms of the Catholic Church making money, that's just nonsense. My scholarship over the years in my dissertation for a PhD was all about the politics of faith-based groups working in immigration. And all the any kind of federal funds or FEMA funds for feeding people, et cetera, are just a way of salting a few dollars out here to get goods and services provided that the United States government chooses not to do. And in the asylum case, and specifically since the late 40s, after we began repatriating everyone into the European and sometimes Pacific theaters following the war, they chose not to use a government agency to deal with people seeking asylum. So they went to faith communities and community-based nonprofits, things like there's a whole bunch of different organizations mm-hmm. out there that are doing this kind of stuff, a lot of which are not faith-based. But they get some dollars that helps them on a per capita basis to process these applicants to do a few things. But absent huge donations from the private sector, city, county, and local nonprofit working together, or individuals, absent that, there's absolutely insufficient resources to get the job done well at all. So nobody's making any money off of this. This is purely a charitable activity. As far as the crime goes, that is a concern. Overall, migrating people commit far fewer crimes than do native-born persons in the United States. That's statistically held true since we've kept records. But when you put people into a community that's brand new and they don't know what's going on, et cetera, you know, a loaf of bread might get stolen. So we need to find other ways to process these people, integrate them into our system, adjudicate them, and return them if that's what's got to be done. But we've got to find a much better, more humane way to do it than what we're currently doing.
Reverend Hoover, always a pleasure. Thank you for sharing your views with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Reverend Robin Hoover, social ethicist with us. He's the founder of the Humane Borders Group here in Tucson. He's no longer with that group, but he has led actually several nonprofits. And he joined us on the live line from Albuquerque, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Want to talk about Mona's Danish Bakery. Mona's now has the liquor license, and they're open right now. You can have a beer with your lunch. You could have a glass of wine. With your breakfast, you could do the wine and orange juice or champagne and orange juice, and however you want to do it. That's just a little added enhancement now at Mona's northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, their website, monasdanishbakery.com. All right, we're going to take our first break of the Buckmaster Show Thursday edition. The renowned comet discoverer, Dr. David Levy, will be joining us on the live line from his observatory in Vail, Arizona. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, this portion presented by our friends in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. It's only about a three-hour drive, perfect time of year. Spring over in the Gila National Wilderness looks awfully appealing if you're into outdoor activities, and so many of our listeners, of course, are. After all, we live in Tucson, and you'll get a beautiful area by visiting Silver City, the Land of Enchantment, part of the southwest corner of the Land of Enchantment. The website is southwestnewmexico.org. There you'll find all sorts of information about your approximately three-hour trip over to Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. David Levy, Dr. David Levy, former science editor of Parade Magazine, now head of and founder of the Sharing the Sky Science Educational Organization, is our contributor on science. Always a pleasure to welcome David to the program from his observatory in Vail, Arizona. Of course, Dr. Levy, one of the most successful comet discoverers in history. David, how are you, sir?
I'm fine, thank you, and really glad to see you.
Thank you.
Good chat we had this morning. It really got me going.
Yeah, I think we need to do more of that, both of us sharing such common grief that just can be so overwhelming.
Which relates to our interview just now,
yeah,
as you'll find out.
You know, I was looking up at the night sky. Of course, many of us do, but I was taking comfort, actually, in it last night, and it almost has, the night sky has a dreamlike quality to it, David Levy.
Yeah, it does. It's which really brings me to a subject that I've been going with lately quite intensely. When I was having on my honeymoon with my first practice wife, I call her, we went to Israel, and we visited the village city of Safed in northern Israel, which is famous because the Jewish spiritualism movement started there, and it really is kind of a headquarters for what they call Kabbalah. And they have all kinds of books you can buy, and I've bought them and haven't gotten much out of them. But for me personally, that means the spirit of going outside and looking at the sky. Not to learn stuff, because I've never taken a course in astronomy, and I legally know nothing about it. And I go outside, and I'm trying to find the soul of the night sky. And that's, to me, is what it's all about. And that brings me to the quote of the month that I will now do, because we'll be a little bit tight for time, so it'll be a short one this month. But one of the things that Sweet Wendy has on her tombstone is the first line of her favorite poem, which is Ralph Hodgson's 1917 classic, The Song of Honor. I stood and stared. The sky was lit. The sky was stars all over it. I stood. I knew not why. Without a wish, without a will, I stood upon that silent hill and stared into the sky until my eyes were blind with stars, and still I stared into the sky.
Mm.
But I know we have more to talk about, so that's maybe more next time, but I did want to bring it up today.
Well, we actually did pick up a little bit of time, David, which is good news. So I've actually got about 6 minutes with you.
Oh.
So we did pick up a little time. We've done the quote of the month, which was very apropos, for what we have been going through, the grief.
It was actually even though I know it so well and I did it from memory,
yeah,
it's hard to do it without crying a little bit, because it really reminds me of her.
Yeah. And, you know, the grief just comes in waves. And for those that may not know, David Levy lost his beloved Wendy before, I don't know, matter of months, actually, before I lost Anne to that rare cancer that took her life in basically 10 weeks. But, David, going back to the night sky, and of course you're always looking for comets, anything on the horizon?
there absolutely is something that's a little above the horizon these days. We've all heard of Halley's Comet.
Yeah.
Have you heard of Halley's Comet?
Of course.
Yeah. I wonder if any of your listeners who are over the age of two have not heard of Halley's Comet. But anyway, it's not the only comet that's in that sort of an orbit, 76-year return. There is another comet that was discovered by Jean-Louis Pons, the French comet hunter, in about 1800, and then rediscovered by Brooks, the American comet hunter, about 1880. And the comet is called Comet Pons-Brooks. I saw it the other night. It is getting brighter. And there is a slim marginal chance that I might be able to glimpse it during the total phase of the eclipse coming up next month, which I know is also on our list to discuss today.
And
but
we have time to talk about it, so let's go right into the forthcoming total eclipse of the sun.
Yeah, just to tell you about the comet, and okay. I would recommend you try to find it, because when the sun is in total eclipse, you look at the sun. You don't worry about a comet. But I have the binoculars, and I might take a glance. During totality, you'll see on the west, to the west of the sun will be the planet Jupiter, and about a quarter of the way between Jupiter and the sun, and a little bit up should be the comet, and it should be pretty bright then. But don't even worry about it. Anyway, it'll be on April the 8th, and I have four pieces of advice to give all of our listeners.
Okay.
The first, if there's any of the sun's photosphere, main part of the sun that we always see, that's visible, you got to use glasses. Because if you look directly and you're concentrating your eyes on the crescent sun, you're going to get blind.
Ooh.
If you don't have the special glasses. So go to Star Arizona or someplace that sells them. You get them a lot of places now. Get yourself a pair of glasses to look at the eclipse with. The second thing is that if you, any of your listeners, are going to the path of totality, one of the things you need to watch for is not just the eclipse sun, but you need to watch for the Bailey's beads, which, as the sun is about gone, you can get little bead-like structure on the edge of the moon as the sun shines through valleys and mountains on the mountain valleys and stuff at the edge of the moon. And then there's the diamond ring. The third thing is look for the shadow. As the shadow of the moon, the great shadow of the moon, is approaching you, you'll be able to see it coming from the southwest, and you just look there towards it, and you'll see it coming, the moon's great shadow. And, Bill, I can't remember what the fourth piece of advice was.
Well, I have I have a question. So how much of the totality will we see in the Tucson metropolitan area, David Levy?
None. Absolutely none. You get about a 60 or 70% partial, so it'll be a decent eclipse.
Hmm.
But the same thing, if you were at DFW, Dallas-Fort Worth, which I believe has a 99.9%, you get zero totality there, even though you might even get Bailey's beads there, but you're not going to get the corona and you're not going to get any of the effects unless you are in the path of totality. Mm. So if you're close to it, make sure you get into it.
And again, the date for that?
April the 8th, and it'll be around noonish.
David, for those that would like to know more about astronomy, do you recommend an astronomy club?
Oh, boy, do I ever. I have a feeling that one or two of your listeners might have heard of the town of Tucson, Arizona. Well, there is an astronomy club in Tucson, Arizona, called the Tucson Amateur Astronomy Association, and that is a good, very good group to become a part of. I am a past president of it. So I have a vested interest, but I think it's a good group, and they meet the first Friday of every month, except not in April because of the eclipse.
And for those wanting to get in with start maybe an entry-level telescope, what kind of money are we talking about to get into a decent telescope?
Actually, you can get a very inexpensive telescope from Explore Scientific. You can actually get them from Amazon and other places. The Astronomy Club can be found online at www.tucsonastronomy.org. But you don't need to spend more than $100 on a very inexpensive telescope. I have one of them. And I stored it outside, protected and very well protected in a box. And about a month ago, I went out to look at it. The box was filled with rainwater, as was the telescope.
Oh, boy.
So I took the telescope out and shook it off and brought it here. And a few days later, it was good as new. And it's only cost about $100. And you can get telescopes like that at Starzona, and you can probably get them online.
All right. Great advice. Good session, David. Thank you very much, and we'll be talking, okay?
Okay. Thank you, and God bless you.
Thank you very much, Dr. David Levy, for his monthly visit with us on the Buckmaster Show. Boy, so much news, political news, happening this week with Senator Sinema saying she is not going to be going for a reelection. We're going to get into a lot of that tomorrow. Very serendipitous to have on probably the most respected pollster in Arizona, Mike Noble, will be with us. And Tim Steller, my friend, the columnist from the Arizona Daily Star, will be with me talking to Mike. And so lots to talk about on our Friday Focus interview. And there's still a lot more to talk about in this session of the Buckmaster Show. Attorney Don Luce with us. We'll be taking a deep dive into some firearms legislation that has been passed locally. Be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, and the Green Thing is Zocalo Village Studio. Perfect time of year to go over to Green Things. Spring with us. Have a really delightful spring. Not too hot, not too cold. 3384 East River Road is their address. Their website's greenthingsaz.com. Their 13-acre site. Everything you need for the garden. And if you can't find what you need, ask one of their friendly salespeople, and I'm pretty darn sure they will point you, and not just point you, but they will take you to the place where you can get the plants you need. Sister business is ZocaloVillage.com. The Buckmaster Show Live Line is presented by our friends over at Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. We're joined in studio. Attorney Don Luce is with us of Luce Law Group with offices in Tucson and Phoenix. Mr. Luce, the Buckmaster Show legal contributor who appears on our program the first Thursday of every month. He is the author of two very popular books, Arizona Laws 101, A Handbook for Non-Lawyers, and Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know. Both books, very, very important. And so important that a lot of people bought them, and Don decided to update them. They're both in their second printing. Hey, Don, how are you?
I'm good, Bill. Thanks.
Always a pleasure to have you. We have an extended visit with you today, two 10-minute segments. Let's begin with a couple of items, one locally, one on a state level, concerning firearms. Let's begin with the Pima County. A new ordinance aimed at so-called straw purchasers, or people who get around gun laws by buying guns for people who are prohibited from owning them.
Right. But is it really? And I'll tell you what I mean by that. This ordinance doesn't address specifically that issue, but rather imposes on us, Pima County residents, the obligation to report if we lose or have stolen from us a firearm.
Okay.
So it's a reporting requirement, and it's mandatory. What the Pima County Board of Supervisors did on a 4-to-1 vote, and the sole Republican on the board opposed this
Steve
ordinance.
Christie, yes.
Yes, mm-hmm. But it passed. And it's slated to take effect in a few more weeks. It requires that anybody who has a firearm stolen from them or who loses a firearm must report to the law enforcement agency in their jurisdiction within 48 hours of the time that they knew or reasonably should have known that the firearm had been lost or stolen. And the failure to make this report could result in a penalty of up to $1,000. Now, the history behind this ordinance is a little bit interesting because initially the ordinance had prescribed a penalty of only $300, but the Pima County attorney wrote a letter to the board and said, hey, look, if you're going to pass this ordinance, I'd like to suggest that the fine or the penalty be increased from $300 to $1,000, because then that will give me greater latitude when I'm deciding the appropriate sanction for the failure to report. The law does not apply to law enforcement agencies or police officers acting within the scope and course of their employment. It does not apply to United States Marshals or members of the armed forces or the National Guard while engaged in their official duties. And it does not apply to firearms dealers or manufacturers licensed under federal law. But otherwise, if you lose a firearm or you have one stolen from you, you've got about 2 days from when you learn of it to report it. And if you don't report it, then you've violated this ordinance. So Pima County, as a standalone jurisdiction within the state of Arizona, now has a firearm reporting ordinance. And that's incredible to me. But it's legal because this issue has not been preempted by the state, and it hasn't been preempted by federal law.
So, can we take a quick call Don Luce. Charles Heller, who knows a lot about firearms, is with us on the live line. Hey, Charles.
Hi, Mr. Luce. You missed something. ARS 1331.08 in paragraph J specifically says that no municipality or political subdivision of the state can enact a penalty in law that is greater than anything the state has. And seeing as how the state has no penalty for this, Pima County is an open and notorious violation of state law, and it is subject to a what's called a 1479 complaint to remove all state shared revenue from Pima County until it corrects its error. Why has no one paid attention to the law?
Thank you for the question, Charles. The Board of Supervisors specifically found that 1331.08 does not prohibit the enactment of this ordinance because 1331.08 prohibits the transportation, possession, carrying, sale, transfer, purchase, acquisition, gift, device, storage, licensing, registration, discharge, or use of firearms. And a reporting requirement for the loss or theft is none of these issues. And so it cited the Arizona Court of Appeals decision in City of Tucson versus Rainier, stating that ARS 1331.08, which is the statute that you just referenced, only prohibits local firearms regulations with respect to those issues specifically identified in the statute. So your point is well taken. However, the Board of Supervisors apparently did consider that in connection with the enactment of this ordinance.
So we'll see if this they'll be legal. We'll see if this is going to be appealed.
And there might very well be.
Yeah. So moving on to, let's see, there was a state issue concerning, let's see, this was the GOP-led House Judiciary Committee approving legislation that would require banks that want to do business with state and local governments to certify they don't and won't discriminate against a firearm entity.
Exactly. And so here's the interesting dynamic about this Senate concurrent resolution. It's SCR 1007. It is the same, essentially, bill that Democratic Governor Katie Hobbs vetoed last year. So they're not sending it back to the governor for another presumptive veto. They're going to put it on the ballot. And this is going to be one of probably more than a dozen measures that the legislature is going to put on the ballot for Arizona voters to decide.
And they can do that. Those are legislative initiatives.
That is the interesting thing about our state and how we can make laws. We can make laws through legislative action, which is a bill sent to the governor and signed by the governor. But with a Republican-controlled legislature and a Democratic governor, that's kind of a complicated process. We can make laws by putting things on the ballot. Citizens can put things on the ballot if they gather enough signatures. And the legislature can refer things to be put on the ballot, which is what this is. And laws are made by the courts. The courts decide what the law is in many instances, and that becomes then the law. So this Senate concurrent resolution is going to be something that we as Arizona citizens vote on. And what this would do is essentially require that banks doing business in the state of Arizona not discriminate against a, quote, firearm entity. And the penalty for discriminating against a firearm entity is that that institution would be denied access to any government contract worth $100,000 or more. So there are some other states that have already enacted similar laws: Texas, Florida, and Oklahoma. And interestingly, and what the opponents to this law say is, well, they'll leave. Rather than comply, they just go. And we've seen anecdotally that in the states that have similar laws, some banks have decided to simply leave the state rather than comply. You have, for instance, Citigroup, which announced several years ago that it would not do business with retailers who sell firearms to customers who have not passed a background check or who are younger than 21. Well, with that policy in place, it will be interesting to see what role Citigroup has in our state if this ballot initiative is passed.
Mm-hmm.
Every year, the legislature sends hundreds of bills to the governor. If the bills are sent to a governor of the same political party as the legislature, they generally get signed.
Right.
If the bills are sent to a governor of a different party, sometimes they get signed, sometimes they don't. Mm-hmm. This is an end round, if you will, of that process.
To go directly to the voters.
Directly to the voters.
That's going to be interesting. You think there are going to be about 12 legislative initiatives that are going to
What I read was there may be as many as 16.
Oh, my God.
16.
Oh, boy. All right, Don Luce, we're going to take a break right here. We'll have more with Attorney Don Luce. It's the Buckmaster Show on a Thursday afternoon. We'll be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. Attorney Don Luce, we're doing a double session with Attorney Luce. There's so much to cover today, so we've extended him for another segment. And Don, you were mentioning in our first segment with you that the legislature can move items right over basically to the ballot to let voters decide in November on a particular issue. And we've got another one, it looks like.
We do. This particular subject is one that is related to the litigation that we've spoken about on this show before, and that's the homeless population in Phoenix and Tucson. So just by way of background, about a year or so ago, a group of homeowners and business people in Phoenix filed suit against the city of Phoenix to force the city to essentially remove the encampment that they called the Zone, which was located downtown near the Capitol. And in order to do that, they needed to convince a judge that that constituted a public nuisance and that they were being essentially denied the use and enjoyment of their property by reason of the fact that hundreds of homeless people were doing things that they felt were affecting their ability to conduct business or enjoy their homes. And they got a judge to agree with them. Mm-hmm. And as we've spoken about on past shows, the city had until early November to essentially disperse the camp called the Zone, and they did, which was an incredibly difficult task because there were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people who were using that space as their permanent living space. So that happened in Phoenix, and then the same group of attorneys who litigated the Phoenix case wrote a letter to the Tucson City Council and said, you being City of Tucson, have a similar situation at Hendrick Acres. Mm-hmm. And there are homeless people who are camping or living in the Wash, the Navajo Wash, and we want you to remove them. Mm-hmm. The city did not, and the homeowners and business owners filed a lawsuit in Tucson, which I believe is still pending, essentially seeking the same relief as the plaintiffs in the Phoenix case were awarded several months earlier. So now, fast forward to March, and we now have another ballot measure that is going to essentially expand upon the rights of property owners with respect to this issue and possibly allow them to seek a property tax refund if their city, town, or county fails to take steps to clear out encampments or stop panhandling or abate other nuisances created by homelessness. It's pretty incredible, really, that a private property owner like you or I might be in a position where we could claim a tax refund. If,
because we had homeless people on the property?
Well, and you would have to show that you had been negatively impacted by the illegal camping or loitering or panhandling. But under this proposal, you as a property owner would have the right to make the claim. So you have the Phoenix decision, which came down in the fall, forcing the city of Phoenix to essentially remove all of the tents and other things that the homeless in that area were using, called the Zone. You have a lawsuit pending in Pima County asking essentially for the same relief. And now you have the legislature referring essentially a ballot initiative for the citizens to vote on that would expand upon that same concept. It would give property owners the right to request a tax refund. And as I mentioned before the break, this ballot referral is one of about 16 or so that is being considered by the Arizona Senate or House to be put onto the November ballot for citizen voting.
Boy, try explaining that one in very simple language on the ballot.
But, you know, as I mentioned earlier, something like this would probably be dead on arrival at the governor's desk.
Yes. So this is sort of an end run around
again,
that
yes.
anticipation. Yeah. Wow. We have time for one more, and this also has to do, this is concerning zoning rules.
Right. So this is House Bill 2570. The interesting thing about House Bill 2570 is that it was passed just barely by getting the minimum 16 votes required for approval, but it got both Democrat and Republican approval. And anymore, that's pretty unusual.
Mm-hmm.
Six Republicans opposed it. Seven of the 14 Democrats supported it. So it's a mixed bag. This bill has been sent to the governor. I haven't read anything about whether the governor is likely to sign it or not sign it. But what it would do is override many of the local zoning laws that make it difficult to construct affordable housing. So if you think about it, many cities have minimum lot sizes that are required. They have minimum setback requirements,
yeah,
design standards. All of these requirements that these cities have are an impediment to building small homes on small lots. And
thus, starter homes take a back seat.
Arizona yeah. Starter Homes Act. That's
yeah.
right. So under this bill, the state could essentially step in with respect to the larger cities, because it would only apply to cities having 70,000 residents or more.
Mm-hmm.
And restrict the ability of the cities to regulate their building standards.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it would affect potentially 16 of the 91 cities in Arizona. But if the governor signs this, I think what you're going to see is a lot of change in the way that cities view what's minimally required to build a house on a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's been dubbed as the Arizona Starter Homes Act. It's on the governor's desk. We'll see if she signs it or not.
Because construction normally goes, I don't want to say cookie cutter, but there are certain restrictions in the zoning that would favor a little larger home over maybe a starter home.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And in fact, the opponents say that this bill would allow, quote, a mishmash of construction. So, I mean, if you think about it, if you have an existing neighborhood and the homes are all 2,000 or more square feet.
Yes.
And then you have a home that's 400 square feet.
Yeah.
Somebody might actually think that is a mishmash.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, that'd be kind of like a mini little home, 400 to maybe 600 square feet. And they are cropping up all over the country.
Well, and because this bill got support from both parties.
Yes.
In other words, it was bipartisan.
Yeah.
The governor may very well consider it.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that the Republicans and the Democrats came together to send this to the governor's desk when historically a Republican proposal gets no Democratic votes and a Democratic proposal gets no Republican votes. And here you have a proposal that has votes from both parties, but it passed without any extra votes to spare. It just got the minimum 16 necessary.
There you go. All right, Don Luce, always a pleasure. Don Luce of the law firm Luce Law. Don is the author of two very popular books, one about Arizona Laws 101 and the other on estate planning, What You Need to Know. Don, thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill.
All right, that's going to wrap it up for the Buckmaster Show. Coming up tomorrow, we'll talk with pollster Mike Noble. Tim Steller will join me from the Arizona Daily Star. Lots to talk about. It's been a big week for politics, with Senator Sinema saying she's done, not going to be seeking re-election. So we'll find out how all that shapes up, what Arizonans are saying in the polls. On behalf of Attorney Don Luce and Tom, engineering and producing the show, I'm Bill Buckmaster, wishing everybody well.